Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Katie Britton. As we peel away the intricate layers of Jennifer Bosworth's novel Struck, we're brought into a world that's not so black and white. As meteorological events have begun to tear apart civilization, two cults have formed and both claim to be able to save the world. Stuck in the middle is Mia. Both cults will stop at nothing to recruit her, and the red scars all over her body are even more enticing to the cults as they know how much power they hold.
These are actually, they're called Lichtenberg figures, and they're a real phenomenon that, you know, people who have been struck by lightning, it sometimes appears on their skin. And supposedly it's caused by electron showers through the skin, so... But with most people who've been struck by lightning, they fade within a few days. But for my character, they just keep growing on her skin until they're covering almost her entire body.
And she's been struck many, many times. It's not just for one strike.
So many times she's lost count.
It's interesting. How did you come up with this character who is a lightning rod, but she can feel that there's this force inside of her in this need to be in the middle of a storm?
You know, I started studying real human lightning rods, and, you know, the guy who holds the world record has been struck 7 times. He's not alive anymore, so he may have been struck more. But he was a park ranger, and, you know, he's much more likely to be struck because he's out in the open all the time. But he never, you know, he never left. He never quit and got a different job. And he actually, you know, his life... he suffered a lot because of the lightning strikes. People didn't want to be around him because they were afraid they would be struck by lightning. But it got me wondering, you know, why didn't he leave? So I started thinking of this, you know, the idea of wanting the lightning, you know, it giving you kind of a charge, like, you know, an energy, like a drug. And, you know, that got me going on the idea of a lightning addict. And that was pretty much when Struck was born.
And Mia, I mean, her family is pretty much on the run because they can't stay in too many places because then the odd things start happening, the repercussions of her having been struck by lightning so many times.
Yes, it's something that she feels really bad about because it, you know, it affects her family. Their previous home was in Lake Havasu City, and, you know, which actually people don't know this, but in Arizona, there can be really bad lightning storms during a certain time of year. So most of the time she's fairly safe, as long as she doesn't go outside. But during a certain time of year, lightning storms can just appear out of nowhere, which is a really, you know, really interesting thing because you don't necessarily think Arizona lightning appearing out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I tried to make this problem of hers as real as possible and, you know, to make it kind of hit home with her emotionally and, you know, affect the people that she loves the most, which is her family. So they have to leave behind everything and move to Los Angeles, you know, where lightning only strikes a few times a year in Los Angeles.
The world's pretty much ending in the sense that a lot of natural disasters are occurring. And part of LA has become the waste, which is the demolished part of the city. And there are two groups that she learns about and is struggling to understand, and the one that her mother has become a follower of is the Prophet.
Yes, that's the Church of Light, which is my invented cult. You know, I feel like you can't have a good end-of-the-world story without a few religious fanatics, because the end of the world brings out the fear in people, just the fear of the unknown, what's going to happen. So this was probably... You know, one of the things I had the most fun creating is my fake end-of-days doomsday cults.
And even the name of the leader of the cult, Rance Ridley Prophet, just in itself seems so bad and powerful.
Yes, it's the double R's, I think, the Rance Ridley. You know, and if you look at a lot of cult leader names, for some reason they have... You know, they sound like cult leaders, like Jim Jones. I think it's that, you know, the double letters.
Right, the alliteration.
It just makes them sound, yeah.
Absolutely. And Mia's mother has been truly taken by this. He broadcasts on TV every single day, and thousands, if not millions of people are his followers. And they're all coming to L.A. because that is where he is based out of.
and he's predicted a number of these natural disasters that are, you know, making people think the world really is ending. He's predicted them before they've happened. So people are taking him more and more seriously, even though he'd been around for a long time. But now people are convinced and they're willing to, you know, give up anything to come and you know, listen to him and believe what he says and hope that he's the one who has the answers and he's the one who can protect them. And if he saves them, then maybe when the true end comes, then they'll be the ones that last.
And on the other side, there are the seekers. And these are people who are similar to Mia in the sense that they have something they call the spark, and they see it in Mia.
Yes, the spark I pictured as, it's like a potential for power. And, you know, a lot of people have, I think, you know, a certain potential and inside of them for power, but, you know, some of them use it and some don't. So I saw this as, you know, something that the seekers would seek out in other people and kind of use their power, you know, awaken their power and, you know, force them to wield it. So they're standing against Prophet's cult, but they're not necessarily good themselves. I like to keep things very gray, you know, in the books that I write, not a lot of black and white, you know, absolute good and absolute evil. So both cults are, they both have their failures.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. You're absolutely right that you keep it gray, because at first you think, well, obviously Mia has to join the Seekers because look at this religious cult on the other side and what it's done to her mother and everybody else. But then there's that dark side to the Seekers with Katrina and Mr. Kale and how Mia thinks, and we pretty much agree as the reader, that they just want to use her to gain more power on their side.
Right. They're so concerned about, you know, being the ones who come out on top in the situation that, you know, they're willing to do anything to get there, which, you know, is to Mia's detriment because she's the one who has the greatest power, but she's also the one who has to, you know, give the greatest sacrifice, you know. And so I think the seekers become blind to what they're doing because they're so focused on the outcomes.
And I kind of feel like she's also in a different position because she is trying to provide for her family. I mean, her mother, after the latest and biggest earthquake, she was trapped in the rubble and so pretty much shut down and has PTSD from it. And Mia has her brother Parker to try to care for. And in order to get food or rations for the day, they have to go to school because the mother can't provide. And the world is in such a state that not everybody can eat. And the homeless population has grown exponentially.
Yes, this, you know, I just wanted to put as much stress and as much pressure as possible on Mia and, you know, see how far I could take it before she would crack. But she, you know, she's a get things done kind of character. She's extremely practical and, you know, she'll do anything for her family. So even when her family is thwarting her at every turn, she's all about them and making sure that she's caused them a lot of problems throughout their lives. And she feels like this is the time when she can give back, like she can try to take care of them.
And so as she's trying to care for them and figure out what side is good and what side is bad, or who's the least evil out of the seekers and followers, Jeremy shows up, and he, like her, has has a spark too.
Yes, he definitely does.
And not just the spark that happens between them.
Two sparks, two different kinds. Yes, he's Jeremy is very mysterious. He has a lot of dark secrets, and he's very haunted by something that's happened to him. And so I think Mia connects to him not only because he's like her, but because he's been through so much just like she has. And they connect on a level of, you know, having been through war together in a way. I think she intuits, even though she doesn't know right away, but I think a part of her knows that he accepts her the way that she is. She's ashamed of the lightning scars that she has all over her body. She keeps herself covered up all the time. And you know, I wanted this to, you know, connect a little bit to younger girls who have body issues and things like that, where, you know, they don't love their body. And Mia doesn't love her body the way it is. But Jeremy loves her the way that she is. He doesn't care about any of that. And, you know, I think that that's the real core of their connection.
You also use T.S. Eliot in the book. And it was just yet another aspect of this novel that brings it to a different level of how intricate and how well planned out the writing is. And for you, when you are going through and you are developing a cult such as Prophets, or even going to the dark side and kind of with the tarot card readings and more of the supernatural side of the Seekers, how did you decide how you wanted to bring it together and bring it to that other level where it just wasn't, all right, this, and this is happening?
Yeah, that was, I mean, it was definitely complicated, and I went through so many drafts trying to get to that point, you know, because what do T.S. Eliot and tarot cards and the Bible and all of these things have to do with each other? But they do connect in a very strange way. T.S. Eliot in The Wasteland, he talks about things that connect to tarot cards. And T.S. Eliot is, I cannot claim to understand what any of his poems, but if you take a few lines here and there, they're just so beautiful, and they seem to have so much meaning, maybe apart from the whole of the poems, that, you know, I just felt like I had to incorporate these things somehow and try to make them, interpret them in a way that made sense to me. You know, I don't know if scholars would agree with what I was doing, but but there's just such a mystery to him and to his poems.
Well, that's the beauty of poetry, of how subjective it is.
Yes, and, you know, that's tarot cards as well. I mean, I started reading tarot when I was writing the book because I wanted to understand. And it really is mysterious the way that it works. Tarot cards are a way to tell a story, and each card has its own individual meaning, and they're very poetic. And I've done a lot of tarot readings for people, which have been almost frighteningly accurate, and I don't know why it works. It just all seems to operate on some connected level. It's hard to explain, but, you know, everything seems very connected to me.
Well, it's well connected in the book. The name of it is Struck. Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Again, the name of Jennifer Bosworth's book is Struck. It is published by FSG. For the Roundtable, I'm Katie Britton. Setting fire to our insides for fun, to distract our hearts from everything.